like to welcome you all to my presentation here. Thanks for coming. And so I've been interested in the intersection between media and politics, political decision and voting behavior. So this is a topic that has been very interesting to me because I am interested in knowing how specifically political information is being processed by voters and subsequently how that kind of information affects decision-making process. And so in this election cycle, we have seen a lot of emotion, right? So a lot of anger, a lot of frustration, and disgust. And so in this first slide, I'd like to show you that this kind of emotion is everywhere, from East Coast to West Coast, from the New York Times to LA Times. The Year of Angry Voter was the headline of New York Times page. And on the next one, LA Times, it doesn't come out, but you get a picture that the title is actually identical. And so emotion is everywhere, but does it start from this year? Not so. Actually, emotion has been around with politics for a long time. And so I'd like to show you that emotion images of candidates have been with the political decision process for a long time. And my research partner and I have just got started in 2000 because I think that there is an increasing trend of incorporating image and emotion in political coverage. And we want to know to what extent those two factors play a role in the electorate. And so in terms of political candidates' attributes, a lot of factors are often discussed or incorporated into research. One is about hair, another is about height, weight, body language, and even speech style. So a lot of these are included in the political communication literature. So speaking of hair, Mitt Romney, he was criticized for having the corporate style. And so in some of the news media, his hair was the focus of discussion. Even comedian Stephen Colbert joked that, and I quote, Mitt Romney proved that his principles are as unwavering as his hair. The New York Times carried a story saying that the linkage between a candidate's image and a voter's decision is present. And speaking of hair, it is interesting to note that no bold US president has been elected in the past 172 years. So for those who don't have hair on the top, I feel sorry. Speaking of hair, now moving on to another feature of political candidate's image is about height. So I just want to show you that a lot of these discussions about appearances and images are not limited to the US. Across the pond, in history, there are a lot of literature that were devoted to discussing what kind of critical image may pave a role for the success of some candidates. So from the left, you can see that Julius Caesar in the Roman period, he was very concerned about his public image. And so he's got a front baldness. So he always combed his hair forward to cover it. And to show off his military achievements, he always wore his laurel wreath on all public occasions. And so that's just one example that back in history, those successful politicians care about their appearance as well. Moving on to the central, the second one. This one is Genghis Khan. His huge empire in the 13th century was really humongous. And his personality and characteristics, such as decisiveness and perseverance, were primarily attributed to his remarkable achievements. So his personalities and characteristics were really notable. And speaking of height, I think that you probably can recognize this figure. He's not particularly impressive in terms of height. He's not alone. Some other modern day politicians, including Nicolas Sarkozy, the former French president and former Italian prime minister, Silvio Berlusconi, also were very afraid of their height. Not afraid, but concerned about their height. And so they always demanded their spouses not to wear high heels so that they can look taller. And so Napoleon Bonaparte always required podium to stand up so that he can look taller when he addressed the military and his staff. So the height is very important. And across the pond, we can also see two pictures up there, Winston Churchill and Margaret Thatcher. And Winston Churchill was noted for his oratorical style. He used patriotic symbols all the time to boost the morale of the British during the World War Second World War. And Margaret Thatcher has gone through a huge transformation in her style and image. She actually got a voice coach to lower her voice pitch and also comb her hair that way so that her style resonates well with conservative voters and her conservative stance. And so the style and image have to be have to correspond with their political stances in order to win the hearts and minds of voters. And it's why image and emotion are very important in politics. So these anecdotes and cases just to demonstrate how important they are, and they are not limited to American circumstance. They are universal, and they can span from in the past to present. So those anecdotes interested us to investigate more, and we want to know more about the literature to see whether they can provide any guidance as to what extent they exert influence. And so one of the early scholars was from University of Oklahoma, Dan Nemo. He argued that attributes of candidates are decisive in some elections. Again, these are anecdotes. Another one that is more recent is a political scientist from Williams College. He said that humans are emotional in democratic procedure. So this is a huge departure from traditional political science, in which most likely they say that the voters are rational. They use all the messages and then make sound decisions. And so this is a huge paradigm shift. And so that indicates that emotion and images are on the rise to influence voters and the democratic process. If we looked at the political consulting industry, the interviews show that a lot of them do advise candidates, aspiring politicians, to care about their appearance, their body language, wardrobe, and also speech. So they always have to prepare a lot of stump speeches, and sometimes their demeanor can be more important than the content of their speech. That's why Tesley Hall Jemison, the noted rhetorical scholars, said nowadays, because of the media, because of the electronic media, the visual part sometimes can be more important than the speech itself. And so the so-called electronic eloquence is very important nowadays to politicians. And so the first televised debate between Richard Nixon and John Kennedy was a case in point that I'm sure that a lot of you have heard about this case, that those who tuned into radio thought that Richard Nixon won, and those who watched TV actually thought that Kennedy won the debate. But we are not saying that, we should not be saying that issues are no longer important, because issue stances are also pretty crucial to a candidate's electability. Some of the hot-button issues such as tax, abortion, gun control, education are still very, very important. And there are people who are particularly interested in those issues, who would pay a lot of attention to those issues. and how each one of the candidates look at the issues. So our issues are still important, and so we need to compare the importance or the contribution of the impact of images and emotions to that impact of issue stance. So we need to consider both together, but based on the literature, it seems that the impact of image was found to have upper hand, so they may actually influence voters more than issue congruence. So we have to think about why this could be the case, why image and emotions matter in democracies. One of the key things we need to notice is that not every voter is interested in political information or election. So the interest vary greatly. And those who are not as interested or do not have time or motivated to access and process information, they probably rely on some cues, instant cues to make a decision. So maybe a glimpse of the politician on television or the party label may provide guidance for their for them to cast their votes in a booth. And so motivation and needs for orientation or need for cognition are very, very important in the elections where there are people who may not necessarily be interested in elections or they have existing knowledge about the issues. So these are some of the backgrounds. And we also need to think about some of the theories that may provide guidance as to why image and emotion can and will influence democracies. One of them is elaboration likelihood model, ELN. A lot of us probably are very familiar with this model, but basically people can use different routes for accessing and processing information. So those who are very serious about an issue or an object will do a lot of thorough research on that information, say medical information or illness and so forth. If you are ill, then you definitely want to get everything to process and to make a decision. So that would be central route. For those who are not necessarily interested, you may pay more attention to advertisement, whether the spokesperson is likable, is attractive or not. And so you may base your decision on those peripheral information rather than the central information. And so applying this to election, those who are very interested in election will gather as much information as possible, whereas those who are not interested in election may be influenced by who endorsed what, or even the singers who are singing in the campaign stage. And so that's ELM. Similarly, another theory is called heuristic systematic model. So in this model, heuristic processing is those is referred to those people who rely on their gut feeling, on their existing knowledge to make a decision. So it's heuristic rather than going out to gather new information. For those who are serious about election or about a certain candidate, then they will resort to systematic processing. So they will go through each one of the information they are able to get and then process and memorize and store in their system. So those are two kinds of modes. And another theory that is also very relevant and is developed more recently is dual coding theory, DCT. So basically it's about sort of a right brain and left brain theory. So one part of brain is more likely to in charge in processing and storing visual information, whereas another part of your brain is more likely to store language, text, and some language is basically language-based information. And so these two parts may be seen separately and they may have different functions, but they actually are integrated very efficiently and synergistically. So one part of brain may trigger the other part to function. And sometimes they may integrate And recent research showed that image-based memory actually lasts longer than the language counterpart. So one example is if you remember, if you have encounter with a person and you know their name and you know their appearance, several years later, you remember you have seen this person, but you don't necessarily remember their names, right? So the image-based memory can last longer. And those information that has both actually can last the longest. So if you know the language, if you know the image, and you store both information in your brain, then it will last forever. Okay, so that's dual coding theory. And so all of these can provide some foundation for us to know why image matter in the election or in the democracies. Another theory that's also relevant is the gender sitting effect. And that basically is about the linkage between what's covered in the media and what people can process or remember. And so there are two levels of agendas in the literature. One is the first level agenda, and the second is, of course, the second level agenda. So the first level agenda, of course, is about the issues that get covered in the mass media. So the media today may talk a lot about terrorism, can talk a lot about immigration and so forth. So the more the media talk about these issues, the more voters think that these are important. And second level agenda is about the attributes or descriptives, some of the nuances that are attached with those first level agenda. And particularly in our case, we are more interested in knowing what kind of adjectives and descriptives they were employed in describing the candidates. So for example, Mitt Romney, this kind of style, the corporate style, and he's a more conservative stance on various issues. All of these could be lumping into the second level agenda. Okay, so these two levels of agendas may interact, may compete to get people's attention. And so before we go about the specific impact of the message on voters, we need to think about what are the criteria that people use in evaluating and judging political decisions and political candidates. So that's where priming theory come in. And so media agenda provide a criteria with which audiences use to evaluate candidates. Once they are influenced by the media's decision as to what is important, what is not as important, then they use that as a criteria to evaluate political candidates. And it's why it's called priming theory. So with first level and second level, first level as issue-oriented, second level sort of leaning heavily toward image and attributes and emotions of political candidates, then we know that there are some sort of competition between the two levels. So there could be issue-related impact on voters, and also the second level is sort of a more related affect, generated impact on voters in terms of their decision-making process. So that's another theory that is relevant in this phenomenon. So with the two levels of gender setting effects, we have to think about the hierarchy of the media effects. Just kind of zoom out that oftentimes we encounter in the literature that they talk about the three levels of media effects, from cognitive, affective, to behavioral aspect of media effect. And so in another word, it is about learn, feel, and do. And so affect level primarily center on the feel, they center on the attitude. So how do you feel about a candidate? Sometimes this kind of visceral visceral reaction can matter more than what you know about the candidate. And so we need to think about the connection between the feel, the attributes, and also the emotion. So there are attributes that have been investigated in the literature, but emotion conveyed by the media has been studied less frequently as the attribute's counterpart. And most of the emotions that have been investigated in the literature include these following emotions. So on the positive side, you can see that it can be proud, hopeful, optimistic, and included. On the downside, which has been focused a lot in recent election cycle, is angry, afraid, irritated, and unsafe. And of course, you may wonder why these eight. These are not exhaustive, a list. They are not necessarily mutually exclusive either. So they are not very good lists, but these are the emotions that have been studied by political communication scholars so far. If you are a movie fan watching that film called Inside Out, I don't know whether you have watched that, but there are five emotions, right? In it, there is only one positive emotion. The other four are negative, and they do not correspond with this. And the reason is that there are a lot of debates about what can be considered a single emotion. And there are a lot of debates about what are the emotions. Even the emotion-based scholars and the psychologists don't agree with each other on what should be considered and what should be relevant in political cycles. So that's something worth further investigation. Okay, so with that, researchers may form hypotheses as the candidate's perceived affect, including both attributes and emotion, will influence viewers' voting decision more than the issue stands, because the issue, even though it's important, it doesn't generate as much influence on voting than the image counterpart or the affect counterpart. So that's the hypothesis researchers can make. So before we go about talking about the findings that verify that hypothesis, I need to go over some of the methods so that you know how we gather the data and the evidence. So it's very complicated. We launched content analysis of four election cycles. So representative election coverage, both text and visuals were analyzed. So four election cycles. And also we surveyed eligible voters in those four elections, plus a Taiwanese case, and also we used American National Election Survey data to supplement our survey. In addition, we conduct experiments with nonverbal balance and issue congruence. So the three issues that were used were economy, crime, and environment. So we had a hypothetical situation in which a congressional candidate was running for office in Kansas. And we sort of manipulated the balance, the nonverbal balance of this candidate. We hired an actor who was a nonverbal specialist to demonstrate positive, negative, and neutral behavior. And the wording was identical. The person was identical, but the nonverbal expression was very, very different. And so the manipulation was a success. So these were the methods that we used. And just so you know, we had done a lot of data crunching, data massaging, and any kind of procedure you can imagine is probably included in this process. So I just want you to know that when you see something, you may wonder, how did you get that information or evidence? Anyway, so these are some of the tools that we use. And so, like I said, the actor in the experiment manipulated positive, negative, and neutral. And so they were recorded in a footage, and it was treated as stimulus to show audiences and see how they respond to the campaign, to the interview. So the first evidence is about gender study between the first level and second level. Remember, the first level is about issue. The second level is about attributes and images of candidates. With two election cycles, 2004 and 2012, you see that the first level is valid in 2004 only, but not in 2012. For the second level agenda setting, you can see that the magnitude of the correlation is much higher than the first level. So compare 0.668 versus 0.516. So this is larger than the first level. Same thing for 2012. For Obama, is 0.684 versus 0.051. So the second level's association with the agenda setting is much greater than the first level, even though for the 2012, none of these association is statistically significant. Okay, so this is first piece of evidence that shows that second level generates a greater influence on voters than the first level. In terms of priming, remember what I said, that priming is about the perceived importance in issue or image that trigger their decision, their voting decision. So for Kerry, this is based in 2004. For Kerry, the first level was only 3.73. The second level shot up to 0.705. So this, for Kerry's case, the second level's influence is greater than the first level. Same thing for George W. Bush. So in this case, it shows that second level, whether it's image or emotion, generated a greater influence on voting decision than the first level. Okay, so that's the first piece of evidence to show you that based on these elections, these two elections, second level, image or attributes-based messages generate a greater influence. Now, we need to think about visuals, because a lot of those election studies focus on text, focus on how people talk about the candidates, focus on how the commentators talk about the candidates, rather than what people actually see or watch on television. So you probably have heard that a picture is worth 1,000 words, right? But interestingly, communication scholars don't focus on pictures that much. And so we try to pitch in and focus on the visuals. And so we analyze shot by shot on television to see how they are portrayed by television. And so the sources of candidate attributes actually come from visuals more than text. And this is what we found also. And so it's imperative for us to really investigate on visuals than just focus on text. And also, according to the expert Ackerman, who was also the consultant of the movie Inside Out, they discovered that the nonverbal communication channel is found to be excellent in conveying effective information. And this kind of capability was found a universal power. So if you show a face to a tribe in, say, South America or Africa, those people are able to identify what kind of mood this picture is in. So this kind of capability is very, very valid and universally accurate. And so we need to form hypotheses on this as well. So the candidates' positive or negative nonverbal behaviors will affect the viewer's evaluation. This is the agenda setting. And then priming, their evaluation of candidate is associated with their voting decision. So this is the second step, the priming effect. And so just so you know that candidates are very keenly aware the importance of the images. So for example, you probably cannot see it in the back, but these two are Bill Clinton and Al Gore. Whenever candidates run for offices, they always have to show their body to show that they are fit for the White House. So they should be able to run at least 1 mile or two, right? Or you have to, you know, bear something on the beach, show that you are fit. And that actually boosted approval rating and sort of voting polling. It boosted polling substantially. Here, Ryan also showed his chest when he ran for the vice president last time. It's universal too. You know, Vladimir Putin always show his chest. And this guy, you probably don't know, Tony Abbott, was an Australian prime minister. He always loved to wear Speedo on the beach and was joked by Australian press frequently. So these are sort of the universal value to public office seekers. So they know the importance of their images to voters. This is one example. So the evidence from our study showed that indeed, based on the experiment, the attributes and in terms of the two categories about image and their perceived capability actually affect their decision more than the issue Congress. If we talk about economy, same thing. In terms of crime, similar pattern emerge. So no matter what kind of issue you talk about, whether it's a sort of a more democratic issue or more Republican issue, when you have the candidate talk about the issue, their images are trump the issue Congress. So another major investigation we conducted was about the positive part and the negative part of image of politicians. And that has something to do with another theory called effective intelligence theory. So this group of political scientists argue that emotions are not necessarily bad for decision making. We often argue that emotions can cloud judgment. Emotions prevent us from being reasonable and rational. But this group of scholars argue that that's not always the case. Sometimes they can actually enhance rationality. And furthermore, they say that negative emotions lead to higher arousal, which stimulate cognition that results in considered judgment. So negative is considered a better and more powerful tool than positive counterpart. In addition, communication scholars found out something echoing their finding that the negative agendas lead audiences to think more negatively. Positive coverage has no influence on public perceptions. And maybe that's the reason why negative campaign and mudslinging is rampant, because they are really effective. So a hypothesis should be formed to test on this. So candidates' negative nonverbal images will influence viewers' assessment of the candidate more than the positive counterpart. Okay, so the evidence we get is this. Based on the experiment, for those who know MANOVA, basically it's the sort of overall test to see whether the model is actually valid and significant. And it does show that different treatments of the nonverbal expression lead to varied perception across the three issues. The overall model is significant, so we're going to skip this part. But the negative cues are found to be more receptive than the positive counterparts. So that support the existing literature. And in addition, the majority of post hoc tests show that negative treatments are significantly different from the neutral as well as positive counterparts. So overall, they support the existing literature that negative cues can be transferred to audiences very effectively. And these are the real cases in real elections. So if we look at the first election 2010 between Gore and Bush, the positive cues and negative cues, visually the visuals, positive visuals and negative visuals have different association with their affect, with the perceived affect. So if you look at the first panel, it shows that positive are significant, whereas negative visual is not necessarily significant. For Gore, it's not really significant, but for Bush, it is.
Moving down, looking at 2004, between Kerry and Bush, positive cues and negative cues are not very significantly associated with people's effects of the effective evaluation of them. The only one that is significant is Bush. The negative cues is negatively associated with voters' assessments of Bush. So this is the only one that is significant. Moving down again, 2008, only Obama's case is significant. McCain, media doesn't have any impact on the perception of him. In the most recent one, 2012, the only thing that is not significant is Romney's negative one. So for people to assess Romney, the negative visuals on the media do not generate any impact on Romney himself. And Obama again is significant, even though this one is negatively related in both cases. So the negative coverage of Obama do not help, do not make people negatively assess his image and the perception. Okay, so that's something interesting, and overall they do not necessarily support the hypothesis that negative cues are more influential than positive counterparts. And it actually varies from year to year. There is no clear pattern what is actually the case. Okay, so this is something generated from the real elections. If we look at the Democrats versus GOP, and also look at the new media versus traditional media, you can see that the difference is out there, that the coverage, the visual coverage about Democrats and GOP is very significantly different. So for Democratic candidate, it's slightly more positive than the Republican counterpart. And if we look at the third row here, in terms of traditional television, same thing that is found, that Democratic candidates seem to get better treatment than Republican counterpart. The t-test is significant. And if we look at the partial correlation between the candidate and the perceived images, it is very significant for Democrats, but virtually no relationship between coverage and perceived attributes of GOP candidates. Same thing for the traditional media. It is significant for Democratic candidates, but not so for GOP counterparts. So it shows that overall, for Democratic candidates, the mediated images of them tend to generate more impact than GOP counterparts. For some reason, GOP candidates are immune to this kind of impact. They do not suffer or they do not enjoy whether positive or negative image portrayed on television or new media. So that's an interesting finding there. So I just like to wrap up my presentation. So image and emotion do matter, even though they do not necessarily show significant findings across the board, but they do matter under special circumstances. Like this year's election, I think emotion is going to be very, very important. And image categories of candidates and emotions, they invoke need more work. So we don't know exactly what are the exhaustive list of emotions and images. So we need to research more on what are the key emotions that candidates can invoke. What are they? Are they all included in the eight emotions that we have investigated, or are they more that we haven't found? So that's something we need to work on. And the role of message balance in elections is not definite either. So we looked at the positive side, the negative side, and how they are compared. And it doesn't show any clear pattern as to what kind of a balance balanced message is more influential than the other. So we need to do more research on that too. And one significant finding is that the impact of candidate attributes on voting intention is greater than that of issue Congress. So that is probably a more definite finding and conclusion of this work. And this deviates from the ideal practice of a true democracy, because we often think that electorate use the information to form their decision. And they are hardworking, they try to get everything, and they try to look at all of the literature, but that's not the case. Voters tend to rely on shortcuts and visceral reactions to form decisions. And whether increased emotion leads to higher interest in learning is not yet addressed. We define that emotions can affect their perceived congruence with politicians. So their liking may interact with their perception of what kind of stance politicians actually take. But whether their interest, whether that would interest them more to investigate more remains to be seen. The finding may be guilty of playing the devil's advocate, because image trumps issue Congress, so does that actually encourage more superficial news coverage? The last one is that emotion and image can be related to critical issues a country is facing. So the case in point is of the referendum, for example, the recent one in Great Britain, and it shows that, headline shows that emotion, not facts. Oops, you can see. Let's see if I can show you that. Yes. So the headline goes, emotion not facts will decide whether Britain stay in the EU. So it's about emotion rather than the fact that determine the election result or referendum result. And so this presentation, I hope, will show you that emotion and the images of political candidates matter, and we actually need more work to sort out the pure evidence and the pure contribution of these factors on our election and democratic process. Thank you very much for your time.